Hey, welcome back to Politico Tech. Today is Monday, September 11th. I'm your host, Stephen Overly. Let's get into the big news today. The House is now back in Washington after the August recess. The amount of tech on their agenda, well, we'll talk about that today. Joining me to forecast the next several months are Politico reporters Rebecca Kern.
Hey.
And Brendan Bordelon.
Hey there.
Last week, the three of us talked about the Senate and what to expect. This week, we're shifting focus to the other chamber. So the House is a more political animal right now compared to the Senate. You know, Rebecca and Brendan, what are you kind of anticipating they'll get done in the next few months?
I don't think there's going to be necessarily a ton of things on tech. I think Rebecca can talk about some of the political reasons that that's the case. I think we are likely to see some piecemeal moves in the emerging tech space, particularly when it comes to AI and quantum. And we can talk about that in a second. But yeah, some of these more sweeping issues, I think even on those issues, the House is looking a little more like small ball, a little bit less ambitious than the kind of things that Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is looking on, particularly when it comes to AI. And again, you know, that's something we can dive into in a bit.
Yeah, I think it's a lot more politicized in the tech space. We're seeing less bipartisan cooperation and having tech as the joint enemy, which we had seen in past Congresses. Jim Jordan has a very political investigation into the Biden administration's alleged collusion with tech companies to allegedly censor content online. And tech companies are more or less caught in the middle of that fight.
Well, let's start there with this investigation that Judiciary Chair Jim Jordan is leading, because he's, you know, issuing questions and subpoenas to tech executives, researchers, folks in the administration.
Right.
It's very broad and, as you said, does have a very political angle to it.
Yeah.
Is that going to take up most of the oxygen for Republicans in the House in the fall?
I think, yes. He's also been doing this since he started. He actually started sending these letters last December before he was officially chair. So he has had this in his target a long time. I think it's really good in terms of talking points going into next year's election. And there is a lot of debate as to whether or not, you know, there's truth behind this. But I have, you know, enough people have said if, you know, a Republican administration were doing this to tech companies, Democrats would also be upset, you know. So no one really wants to see a lot of pushing on private entities to do things. The question and what Jim Jordan's saying is that violates the First Amendment. Whether or not it does, there is an existing court case out there called Missouri v. Biden. And Jordan's been able to use discovery from that court case as evidence in quotes, in his investigation. Some of these are uncovered emails between Biden officials and tech companies. Some of them use very strong language, like the F-bomb, aren't you doing this to Facebook?
Right.
But we have to recognize this was a very specific time. This was early days of Biden in the middle of COVID. And arguably, tech companies weren't doing enough to remove misinformation, which they literally did have policies saying they would remove
that,
it.
That is the central issue, is like the companies were removing misinformation related to COVID and related to the election.
Yes.
And Jim Jordan is sort of arguing that that is an
example
of conservative
spinning that as saying that is censorship. So, and this is not a new topic, the topic of jawboning. Jordan, you know, Brendan and I have written about before, which is, you know, allegedly a government entity like pressuring a private company to do something. And ironically, some would say this is Jim Jordan jawboning the Biden administration and tech companies. So, you know, but he is in charge, so he can do what he wants here. I've asked folks, there's nothing technically illegal about what he's doing. He's allowed to subpoena folks. It's unusual that usually you put it information requests and give companies time to respond. And often within a week, they're being subpoenaed, which is very unusual. And one other thing is researchers are also getting caught in the middle. And this is something to watch for 2024, because it could be intimidating people from actually wanting to research the disinformation around elections. And that could be very scary for our democracy. I mean, literally, some of these researchers are getting death threats at their house and potential pulling of funding and support from universities, because this is a liability for them.
We're heading into an election year. I would imagine that we might start to see even more sort of fireworks and, efforts to get media attention and, yes. and just sort of get these political talking points out there.
And it wouldn't be the first time that I think either party, but I think to be frank, especially Republicans, have used, the pinata of big tech as a sort of a political, a talking point and way to kind of prepare for an election cycle.
Fundraising emails around conservative censorship by social media companies. Yes, we've seen that in past election cycles.
We might see a Republican candidate start to do that again soon. Yeah, maybe several.
Right. We'll be right back. Brendan, there does seem to be some stuff moving in the realm of AI. Can you talk a bit about what we're actually expected to see and what the House might tackle in the next few months?
Yeah. Under the political radar, things are moving. It's actually much less high profile than what's going on in the Senate, where we talked about last week, I think, Chuck Schumer's sweeping approach to AI legislation. But I actually think this stuff is achievable in a way that maybe the Senate stuff is not, even if it's quite small ball. So one of the big things that the House is focusing on, there was legislation that dropped a few weeks ago ahead of the recess, it would create the National AI Research Resource, NAIR. What it really is basically like a cloud computing sort of program for startups and small researchers to be able to play with advanced AI models. So like right now, the amount of computing power that you need to actually research or work on like a big AI model is so through the roof that only the big companies really have the resources. I mean, we're talking like, probably not far off from like a $1 billion model, that kind of thing. So Google, OpenAI, Microsoft, like they can do this stuff. But if you're a researcher, even at a big, well-resourced institution like Stanford, like good luck getting your hands on that. There are governments that would like to see a way for sort of a public sector sandbox for these researchers and smaller AI companies to work on this. The UK is actually moving on this, and this would be the US sort of version of that. There is not any money attached to this bill. It's just an authorizing thing. So we'd set it up, and the key voices here are the House Science Committee members. So Frank Lucas is the chair. Zoe Lofgren is the ranking member. Neither of them are very bullish on the prospect of money. So the Biden administration would like $2.6 billion for this over 6 years, which is actually pretty small potatoes in the AI.
A ton of money. The government's got a lot more than that, but just getting the purse strings to loosen.
But Lucas doesn't really want to spend that money. He's talking about a pilot program. That would still be a big step, though. I think, the researchers I talked to were like, just get it on paper. Let's get moving on that.
Is the goal of this sandbox to just like give researchers access to it? Is it to like make AI more competitive?
Yeah.
So it's not locked up in these
big
companies?
All of the above. Yeah, exactly. I think there's a lot of fear at the moment that AI is kind of running away with a handful of companies. There's potential antitrust issues down the line, I think, that would arise from that. There's also just sort of a sense of we should have more minds in the room, the best minds in the room, and maybe not the minds in the room that are solely focused on profit. Let's get some nonprofit researchers in there. Let's get some folks, increase competition. It is all really about sort of like expanding the space for like sort of the best minds to work on this beyond the ones that have already been kind of snapped up by Google, OpenAI, and the big players.
Is there a companion legislation in the Senate to establish
there is,
this?
There is. The House has taken the lead, I think, for the most part. You see this a lot on science issues, I think, because the House has an express sort of science committee.
Right.
You tend to see them kind of move a little more aggressively here. But there is companion legislation in the Senate. I'm pretty confident this will get passed. But again, until there's money attached, it's kind of just a placeholder. So an important one, but...
And another issue that is probably even more forward-looking and future-looking than AI is quantum computing. Is there much happening on the House side with quantum? Are there folks who have sort of taken that niche area on as part of their legislative mandate, if you will?
Yes. There is something that kind of like has to happen. I'm putting has in quotes here because like there's it is the House. And so like they often do not pass things that have to pass. But there is the National Quantum Initiative, which has been this very successful, I think, by all accounts program run out of NIST over the last few years, is expiring. There does need to be a reauthorization of that program. Again, it's pretty low, like small potatoes in some ways. There's not a ton of money attached, but it has been, I think, very effective in research in this space. I should back up and just, briefly say what quantum is. Very like small particles acting very strangely and having all sorts of impacts in terms of encryption, breaking sort of like encryption, the way the U.S. government has encrypted secure messages for a very long time. Things related to like quantum computing. So these are like computers that can solve problems that classical computers would take millions of years to solve. Depending on who you talk to, we're either like, you know, 30 years out from these things or like 2 to 3 years out. So there's a wide range of people who say like, this is going to sort of change the world. I think especially in concert with AI, if you can put an AI model and, you know, strap that onto a quantum computer that's millions of times more powerful than a classical computer, you know, away we go. But there hasn't been a ton of money attached to this either. And that's one of the other things. So people would also like to see the development of a quantum supercomputer by the federal government. Companies would really like to see this because they would like to start playing with it. There are classical supercomputers run by the government that have been, I think, quite successful in solving a lot of problems with things related to weather and, you know, drug synthesis. And I think there's a question of, you know, whether the money can be found to build something like that. That is probably not going to happen this Congress either.
How much does a quantum supercomputer cost?
I think it's going to start out in like a few billion, but that's going to be like kind of like seed money, right, for that kind of thing. And so it would be expensive. Yeah, I think probably in some ways more expensive than the AI cloud sort of operation that we're talking about here. Businesses would probably put up part of the bill as well. I think there's a sense. So like IBM is really like keyed in on this. And they're in some ways, you know, at the forefront of the quantum stuff. So I think they would probably be involved. We're going to have to pass these like low-hanging authorization, quantum authorizations first. Again, I think House Science is very focused on those quantum questions, maybe almost to the expense or at the expense of AI. I think I've talked to folks over there that sometimes say like, well, the Senate's doing that, so we're going to do quantum because somebody's got to do quantum. So yeah, but the emerging tech stuff, I mean, it's not political. It is complicated because it's expensive. So yeah. that's kind of where we find ourselves in the House right now.
Well, let's finish out with a very quick rapid fire. And last week, if you listened to our Senate episode, we struggled in the rapid fire round, but I have every confidence we're going to deliver this time. Our colleague Josh Sisko reported this story about the House ENC committee potentially taking up an antitrust bill that had previously been in judiciary. Any chance you guys think of that gaining some traction?
I think it's a far off shot. Because this is technically originating from a Judiciary Committee first in the Senate, and House ENC and Judiciary don't always get along. And so even if we have Representative Kat McCormick, from a Republican from Florida, who's saying she's interested in leading her co-sponsoring that bill, it's called the Open App Markets Act, which would force Apple and Google to allow third-party providers to offer in-app purchases and allow third-party app stores on those phones. Even if House ENC were to introduce this bill, they're going to have a future fight with House Judiciary.
Right, over for
jurisdiction. And Jim Jordan just has totally cut the legs out of the antitrust subcommittee. I mean, Ken Buck was demoted off leading it. And that, to me, I mean, says very directly, Jim Jordan doesn't care to regulate antitrust. And he put Thomas Massie in charge of that committee, who doesn't see this as a priority. I mean, I don't think they've had any antitrust subcommittee hearings even.
Yeah, I think the key committees have moved on, and ENC and Judiciary. I think they're focused on other issues, ENC on privacy, Judiciary on whatever Jim Jordan thinks is important. And the given day when it comes to the sort of browbeating of the tech companies over censorship. So I think just like in the Senate, antitrust is probably not going anywhere this cycle.
And then TikTok, you know, the House has a lot of China hawks who tend to be the most critical of TikTok and have in the past vocalized trying to do something on TikTok. Will they do anything on TikTok?
Yeah, I think the House is looking at the Senate's efforts in this space and saying they don't go far enough. So, you know, the Mark Warner, John Thune bill that we talked about last week, the idea that, you know, they were going to give the Biden administration more authorities to ban TikTok. The House, these China hawks are like, we should just pass a bill saying they're going to ban TikTok altogether, which I don't think would actually go anywhere in court or anywhere else. But I think it's sort of indicative of where the House is on this issue. Feels a little more political than actually plausible when it comes to what they want to do here. And again, you know, folks have kind of moved on, I think, in both chambers on that question. So I don't see a lot of movement on TikTok or honestly on a lot of China stuff generally, I think, beyond potentially research security restrictions. So there has been stuff in the House defense bill when it comes to the ability of U.S. and China researchers to collaborate. The House Republicans would like to crack down on that. I think some people in the Senate are worried about that. So TikTok, no, but I think you might see some fights over the ability of U.S. and Chinese researchers to work together and how far those could go. I think there is an effort to crack down on that, and we'll see where that ends up in some of the defense bills coming down the pike.
Well, let's close out with just a quick comment then on privacy. I know in our last episode we touched on Congresswoman McMorris-Rodgers, yeah. right, has a bill potentially coming out. Is that the big thing
that's
to watch?
What she says. Yeah, we've been waiting all year long. And, you know, it's the American Data Privacy and Protection Act. She introduced it with Frank Pallone. And actually last year, when Roger Wicker was ranking member in Senate Commerce Committee, he was signing on too. We did not have Cantwell, so it never moved in the Senate. But it made it through committee last year in a quite bipartisan vote. I think what we're watching for is Kathy McMorris-Rodgers to put her spin on it now that she's chair.
Yeah.
But if she spins too hard, she will lose Democrats. And Brendan and I have already reported with our colleague Alfred Ng about some of the fights about like giving law enforcement access to data broker data and the concerns from Democrats that this could be tracked for to women seeking abortions. They've been very tight-lipped because they know when content gets out in the press, it does break down some of their negotiations. So they're not saying a lot. I don't think even if it is introduced, they'll have time to move it. So, and there's no appetite in the Senate for, I mean, right now, we're not seeing a federal privacy bill there.
It seems like McMorris-Rodgers is you know, renegotiating the deal that they had last cycle on privacy, and that is causing a lot of problems in terms of just timing. I mean, we're in September now, and there's still no bill. You know, she told me specifically a few months ago that we're going to have a new deal because Republicans are now in the majority. I do think that the state efforts on privacy are taking a lot of the wind out of the sails on the Hill. I think, Alfred and I, our privacy reporter, wrote about this a few weeks ago. The tech lobby is just not focused on what's going on in Washington right now on data privacy. They're more interested in what's going on in the states. Over a dozen states now have privacy bills. I think about seven have moved this year alone. With that pressure focused on the states instead of in D.C., I just think there's less appetite for movement in Washington.
Listen, Brendan and Rebecca, I know you will both be continuing to cover all of this drama as it unfolds. So if you're listening and you have intel, reach out to us with your scoops. But listen, thank you both for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us.
That's all for Politico Tech today. What are you expecting the House to accomplish in the next few months? Tell us at techpodcast@politico.com. And for more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's show comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our senior producer is Annie Reese. Our editors are Steve Heuser and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overley. I'll see you back here tomorrow.